Good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns has aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a kind of dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We're your co-hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves, and we hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. And just a reminder that we're recording the show in advance and won't be taking any calls. Liz, you're going to introduce our topic today.
Yes, hello. So we are here with Naomi McIsaac. She is the new-ish, we'll get the timeline from her, Director of Early Childhood Programs at Downey's Community Partners. So working in Hancock and Washington counties. And that's an important role and an important organization. And we're really happy to get to know you and learn more about it. And Anna Hicks, who is the Policy Director for Human Services at the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation and the Future. So our plan today, we had a show a couple of years ago about childcare, and in it, we talked mainly about the logistics of it. Parents who are working need a safe place for kids to be and need to find a way to pay for it. But today, we wanted to explore a couple of other angles. What are all the different kinds of programs and resources available to families in Hancock and Washington counties in early childhood education, and how do they work together? What are the needs and opportunities for improved early childhood education in our state and region? Why is it important? And who's playing the lead roles to respond? So, Will, we want to say hello and get to know you just a tad. So, Naomi, tell us a bit about yourself and how you landed here in this role.
Sure. So I grew up in Bar Harbor. My father recently told me we're 11th generation from MDI, so a long-time Hancock County family. But I've actually been living out west for about 20 years now. I recently moved back with my family from Tucson, Arizona. I was working in early childhood education in a Montessori setting out in Arizona in a network of public charter schools in the administration. And moving back here to Maine, was really excited about this opportunity at Downey's Community Partners. I'm brand new to Head Start, which is our mission here at Downey's Community Partners. We offer childcare, Head Start, childcare, a mishmash of a lot of different types of care. We partner with quite a few public pre-K programs too. So I've been here at DCP since April and have been drinking from the fire hose ever since.
Awesome. Well, welcome. And Anna, tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. So I moved to Maine 20 years ago now in 2004. I met my husband in Washington, D.C., and he is a Mainer. So we bounced around for a while across the country and then decided to settle in Maine 20 years ago, live right down the road from my in-laws in Brunswick, and have really appreciated their support. Speaking of early childhood, my mother-in-law played a huge role in helping me be able to work and also helping me with taking care of my children. I have worn a variety of hats in the world of public policy. I started in Maine as an advocate, an anti-poverty advocate at Maine Equal Justice Partners, and spent a lot of time in the legislature advocating for strengthening our public benefit programs for people with low income. And after that, was worked in the legislature for Speaker of the House Mark Eaves as his chief of staff, and then was able to join the team with Governor Mills in her Office of Policy Innovation in the Future, and started by supporting the work and coordinating the work and really leading the work of the Children's Cabinet, which we'll talk about in a little while, as well as I oversee the work of the Cabinet on Aging and our anti-hunger work here.
Great.
I will say too, before Ron jumps in, That speaking of our own children, I wanted to just note as your co-host and co-producer that I do have a personal connection, and it's part of why I'm interested in this topic, but not all, that I have an 18-month-old, and my husband and I were really impressed and grateful and thrilled at a couple of the programs, and I think we'll touch on them, that were available to us, and we found out are available to everybody for free. So more on that later, but that's just a point of connection.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons that this program works so well is that we both, Liz and I, use our kind of personal interests and history and so on. And that leads us to the topics that we want to explore and share with our listeners. So thanks to all of you for being here today. Let's start with this notion of the importance of early childhood education. Anna, you mentioned the role of grandparents and the support that families can give. And then we moved to the older model was, we put kids in grade school. And there was a gap between kind of birth and early childhood with parents and grandparents giving it, and then schooling. What's the importance of early childhood education? How have we come in the United States to understand this importance? Anna, do you want to get started and then move to Naomi?
Absolutely. And Naomi can talk from her experience as well. But from the policy perspective, really investing in early childhood education is one of the best investments that we can make. It's really important that we are providing that early childhood education really sets the foundation for future learning and success of our children. I think you guys talked about in your last conversation around childcare, around, you know, really that peace of mind that is that is for parents who will want to be able to balance work and family. But that in early childhood education is really key for child development and for supporting social emotional learning and the learning that really sets that foundation to set children on the right trajectory.
Mm. Yeah, I would add to that, Anna, you know, 90% of a child's brain develops by age 5. And so I was a middle school teacher for many years, and it was always really clear to me, children who had the advantage young of having stimulation and learning how to learning social emotional skills younger on. It's playing catch up after that point for a long time, and it's much more challenging. And data really shows that, you know, children who have the benefit of early childhood education, they're more successful in high school, they're more successful as adults. And what we're seeing really right now post-pandemic is we know that families really struggled during that early time of trying to parent. Add to your transparency, Liz, I'm a mom of a 4-year-old. So my child was born in February 2020, right before shutdown. And I personally know the challenges of trying to be both a mom and a working mom at the exact same time with a new baby and a new child. And so the children we're seeing right now are really far behind, especially in their social, emotional development. And that's an area where teachers can really help children build those skills before they get to kindergarten.
Mm. Naomi, you mentioned being a Montessori teacher and that whole philosophy. And tell us a little bit more about how that fits into the belief that early childhood education is important.
Sure. Yeah, Maria Montessori was a real innovator. She was, if you're unfamiliar with her story, she was the first female doctor in Italy, and she developed her philosophy of education kind of between the two world wars. And what she started working with children that were considered, you know, unteachable, really from families in poverty, in a time when people weren't prioritizing children of families in poverty. And she was able to use her training as a doctor to build an entire curriculum that focused on giving kids this skill early on to become problem solvers, to be able to work together cooperatively. One of her big goals was to develop a world where there wasn't as much competition that she was seeing between these two world wars, and children who are able to be lifelong learners. So she really was able to see a lot in her observations and data that now through neuroscience we're able to see was accurate over 100 years ago. So some impressive work that still rings true today.
And I just to piggyback on that in terms of what we've been learning around research, and obviously, you know, Naomi mentioned all that we know about the importance of brain development. And we've focused a lot around in public policy around the adverse childhood experiences mm-hmm. and how those can really harm children over the long term, whether that's living in poverty, living in stressful environments, trauma, abuse. But we've also learned from recent research that positive childhood experiences, such as quality early childhood education, connections with adults, connections with peers, really can start to provide buffers for those adverse childhood experiences. So the sooner that we can really be supporting children and families at an early age and providing those positive environments, both for children and for the parents, and that's where early childhood education really comes in. That, Head Start really has that model of making those connections, not only with children, but providing comprehensive supports for families. Those kinds of programs can really provide those buffers for those adverse childhood experiences and really, again, change the trajectory for children moving forward.
That is the ideal bridge. Thank you so much for the next thing I wanted to ask about, which is a little bit of history on. So there was a giant policy goal and decision at the federal level, I don't know how many years ago, I'm hoping one of you do, to create this thing we call the Head Start program, and it's national. So Naomi, what is it? And how long has it been around?
Yeah, so, and I will preface this by saying I'm new to Head Start as well. And I've been so impressed, so phenomenally impressed with the program. The goal of Head Start is, it started actually as a summer program to help prepare children for kindergarten, to give them that, you know, that little bit of a head start before they entered kindergarten. I think any kindergarten teacher will tell you it's night and day. They can see a child who's been in an early childhood program before they first come into the classroom versus those who haven't, who don't have that advantage. So the goal for Head Start is to help families in poverty with childcare. But as Anna said, we recognize that a parent is a child's first teacher, right? And so something I love about the Head Start program is this model of partnering with parents, having parents be a huge component of every decision that's ever made. They're always welcome in the classroom. Parents can pop in at any time. And we have a policy council that all, you know, needs to, a parent policy council has to approve all decisions that are made. And so the goal is to be able to support parents in multiple ways, with home visits, with childcare. The curriculum for Head Start includes a lot of components, such as for children's life skills, like toothbrushing. We do family style meals, so the kids will sit down with their teachers, and you know, my 4-year-old is the pickiest eater in the world. And his teacher will say, you know, I've never tried this before. I think I like this. And they cheer each other on if somebody tries something new. So there's, you know, nutrition is a big component of the program. So really trying to set kids up for these practical life skills that they will need moving forward.
Yeah. So now it's no longer a summer program before kindergarten starts. It's what ages? And then here at Downs Community Partners, there's also a pre-Head Start, or maybe
that's
I have the
right.
name wrong.
It's called early Head Start. Early Head Start is for 0 to 3, and Head Start is for 3 to 5, 5-year-olds typically. We're funded for about, the families are funded for half the day of the program. So Head Start really funds 4 hours out of the day for the 3 to 5 year old age and 6 hours for a 0 to 3 year old program. And then we try to cobble together all this additional support. The state of Maine is phenomenal, Anna, all the work you're doing. So a lot of times we're able to offer family more support for that childcare piece, because we all know that early childhood education is also a time when parents can go to work, which is a huge component of childcare. And so I think there was a time when parents were, maybe both parents weren't working in the home, that 4 hours of care was plenty. And that's not really the case anymore with 2 working parents.
So. Yeah, just to piggyback on that, yeah. I would say that these programs have really been, there's been a phase and approach as families have changed and more women entered the workforce. So Head Start actually, as Naomi said, started as a summer program. It is a federal program, and it was part of LBJ's War on Poverty. So it's been around since the 60s. And in 1990, Congress put in place the Child Care Subsidy Program, which has built up over time as well. It is a federal block grant to states to help families with low to moderate income pay for childcare. We have a mixed program in our state of a federal program and a state funded program. And then we've also taken significant steps to expand public pre-K for 4-year-olds as well.
You're reading my mind, Anna. It's so weird. That was literally the next question.
So, I mean, it's funny because it has been, really has been somewhat piecemeal over time as we've been trying to adapt to what we've been learning about early childhood education and the importance of that education, as well as, just as Naomi was saying, supporting parents and working parents, and trying to make sure we're meeting both of those needs. We really are in Maine focused on strengthening what we call our mixed delivery system. So birth through age 5, there are many different players within the space providing critical supports in education for young children and their families. So that includes Head Start, child care, public pre-K, home visiting, early intervention services. So we are really working at the state level now, making sure that we are thinking about this as a system and how is it coordinated and how are we encouraging and facilitating collaboration and making sure, so this is the last thing I'll say on this piece, but making sure that as we expand funding for some programs, we're not harming others. So Naomi will be all too familiar with this as we expand public pre-K for 4-year-olds, and we fund our public pre-K programming through our schools. So schools are stepping up to the plate and using local funding to match state funding to provide public pre-K for our 4-year-olds. But what happens is 4-year-olds are then pulled out of our childcare system. And the 4-year-olds, the 3 and 4-year-olds, actually the funding that parents put into the system to pay for 3 and 4-year-olds actually helps to fund our infants and toddlers because of the ratio of, the ratios have to be small. We only can allow for four infants per 1 caregiver or teacher in a infant classroom, whereas in a 3 and 4-year-old, we have 8 students for each teacher. So this is kind of a complicated way to say that the fiscal structure of our childcare programs, the way in which they work and the way in which we're able to pay the childcare programs are able to support infant and toddler care is really through our making sure that they're also providing care for 3 and 4-year-olds. So because infant and toddler care is just so expensive and parents are struggling to afford childcare as it is. So if we pull 4-year-olds out of our childcare programs, that upsets the apple cart. It makes it more challenging for childcare programs to operate and to support infant toddler care. So what we're looking at and trying to encourage and incentivize at the state level is we have a whole system of high quality childcare in our state, and schools should be taking advantage of that for a variety of reasons, and really partnering with our childcare programs to provide quality education to our four-year-olds. So we're looking there are, across the state, there are more and more partnerships between Head Start and our schools, as well as our center-based and family-based childcare programs and our schools, to be working together to provide that education and ensure that we don't pull children out of our existing system and strong system.
Yeah, it's a dance. We're going to talk a lot more about that. About if you're just joining us, you're tuned to Talk of the Towns on WRU Community Radio. And our guests are Naomi McIsaac, who's the Director of Early Childhood Programs at Downey's Community Partners, and Anna Hicks, the Policy Director of Human Services at the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation and the Future. So we are now fully into the weeds, and I've got six questions from what Anna just said, but I want to make sure we don't go into any one rabbit hole. Let's see. Very, very zooming, flying back up, as my boss likes to say, to 20,000 feet. What are the, you mentioned broad categories of programs, and we talked about childcare and Head Start and home visiting program. And you mentioned another bucket that you called early intervention. Mm-hmm. What are, Anna, early intervention programs? And then we'll go back to Naomi for some other specifics.
Yeah, early intervention programs are specifically looking at providing those supports for children who are identified to have special needs or disabilities.
Okay.
And so that's our child development services. They are broken into two different programs. One is for birth up to age three, and that's our early intervention for me program. Our child developmental services for 3 and 4 year olds is currently at the community level. Through our child developmental services over the next several years, we actually be transitioning that responsibility for special education services to the schools. So 3 and 4 year olds will soon, over again, it's going to be phased in over a 4 year period, will be receiving those services through our schools. Right now, it is through regional offices, through child developmental services. And those types of services include special education services for 3 and 4 year olds, and also occupational therapy, speech therapy, and language. So there are a variety of educational services to ensure that we're preparing our young children to succeed in school and identifying early on disabilities and special needs so that we can have professionals work with families, childcare providers, and children to be able to provide them with the supports that they need to be successful.
Great. Thank you. So I think child development services may be one of them. Naomi, I, for one, as a resident of Hancock County, get confused when I'm driving around Ellsworth. And I think I have a sense of what the programs are and what the organizations are and who does what. And then I see a sign and I think, wait, I don't know what that one does. So I think there is a sign somewhere that says child development services. And I know Downey's Community Partner is partners includes what used to be, I have it written down, Child and Family Opportunities was its own nonprofit. And I think that maybe it was running Head Start. Can you give us a little sort of lay of the land of what the programs are?
Yes, there was a merge about 7 years ago between two organizations, realizing that there was some duplication of efforts, and wouldn't it be great if we could serve clients all in one house? So right now at Downey's Community Partners, I work in the early childhood program. But I work, you know, my office right next door is a couple people in our social services program. And so if I have a family that a teacher says to me, this family is really struggling with being able to pay their heating bills right now, I'll be able to reach out to someone in DCP and schedule an appointment with our energy services department to help set them up to help pay for heating. So we have folks, we have a transportation department, we have a housing department, we have energy services, we've got our social services team, and then you know, trying to see this big picture of how families in poverty or folks in poverty are. There's just so many interlocking areas that support is needed to help lift them up. And so, for example, you know, if a family comes in the door here to drop their child off at childcare, we've got food available from our food pantry right at the door that they can take as they leave. If they're food insecure at the moment, we have a coat rack set up with diapers and clothing and shoes and things that families might need to help their kids come through. We have a team of family coaches who meet with the families one-on-one. And right, just last week, the coach in the office next door to me was just packing up back to school backpacks. So these are for school-age children who might not have all the supplies they need. And I know at my kids' school, it's great. They don't have to bring supplies to school, but I know to get some of his homework done, he has to have those supplies at home to get the work done. So we're trying to recognize that not all kids are able to afford backpacks to get back to school or the supplies needed. So really trying to have this umbrella where we're meeting all the needs in sort of a one-stop shop here at DCP, and we're the CAP agency for Hancock and Washington counties, and then we have similar CAP agencies in other counties in Maine.
So what is CAP?
That CAP stands for a Community Action Program. So similar to Head Start, I believe that was founded in the 60s, and Head Start and CAPS oftentimes go hand in hand together with the goal of helping support people in poverty and to help the mission being to help bring people out of poverty.
I was just thinking, do you guys remember Bridge to Terabithia, the wonderful old book that the new the teacher assigns watching a particular television program, and the one protagonist realizes that his new friend who has just moved to town doesn't have a TV at home, and it provides that support for his friend to help get what she needs. What is another program that, and this is one of the ones I mentioned at the beginning in my own life, that there is a nurse visit program, I've got the name wrong, that I think Downey's Community Partners operates. Could you tell us about that? I don't know if it's in your department or not.
Sure. It's not in my department. It's in social services, but we do have nurses, especially for new parents, available to do home visits and help with maternal needs for new moms.
Yeah.
And so that was expecting moms as well.
Cool.
So let me just ask the question, the programs that Community Action generally provides are for folks who have difficulties with income, and yet early childhood education is available to all folks, whether they're income challenged or not. Is that right?
Yes. So, for example, here at Downey's Community Partners, we have spots for both. I'm paying for childcare for him. We often refer to blending and rating of funding. So, some of our children they qualify for partial support. Some of our children's families do not qualify. As Anna mentioned, we partner with public pre-Ks as well. And so, for example, in the Jewett School in Bucksport, we have 4 early childhood classrooms. 2 teachers are funded by the school district. 2 teachers are funded by us in Head Start. And we work together to be able to serve all the children in Bucksport, whereas the funding might not be able to serve all of their 4-year-olds otherwise.
Is it safe to say that if a child and a family is curious about what support is needed, where do they call and how do they sort this out for themselves? Who's the best person to answer that? Anna,
can you? So I can answer some of that. And I would say that the community action agencies are an incredible resource. And Naomi talked about how families come in and they get support. And that is a great place to get in-person support. And I just to give a plug for the whole families coaching that's happening, that those coaches really help families navigate various systems and actually help connect parents to employment as well. So to training and really set goals for those parents. There is another statewide resource, though, that I want to make sure folks know about, because it, I mean, Ron, what you were getting at is it's really challenging, right, to navigate these systems and to know where to go. And we have a central phone line for parents with children or prenatal all the way through age 8 that parents can call Help Me Grow, where they can talk to a family resource coordinator and get information about their child's development as well as programs to support their children and families. So that's a really important resource. Help Me Grow has served now 1,200 children over the last year and a half since it started in the state. And so it's a really, and a lot of families don't know about it. So there are a variety, I don't want to discount though the importance of that personal in-person interaction that the CAPS provide as well. So there's different ways to get help, but Help Me Grow is that central phone line that folks can pick up the phone and call and get referrals. And they may get a referral to a Head Start program to early intervention for me. And the person on that line, the family resource coordinator, will follow up with the parent as well to make sure that those referrals actually were followed through on and the family got the services and support that they need.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Yeah.
The other resource I would add is 211, which, you know, I know, for example, at Downey's Community Partners, we used to print a pamphlet of these are the services we offer, but it changes so quickly. You know, the minute you print it, it's out of touch. So if you can either dial 211 or go to, you know, if you Google just Maine 211, you'll find information about a variety of supports from early childhood education to substance.
And 211 and Help Me Grow are connected because we didn't want to confuse families. So if you call 211 and you decide you want to talk to someone at Help Me Grow, you can push a number to get to Help Me Grow too. Naomi, that's a really good point. It sometimes it's nice to have like one central number. So if you call 211, you can actually get to Help Me Grow as well.
I'll chime in one third umbrella resource, and then we'll jump back into more early childhood specific stuff, but that I was thinking about how the actual state run programs, the ones that are state staff for, you know, basic level, basic needs support, food stamps, the SNAP program and the temporary assistance for needy families. Those two things plus Maine Care, you get them all in the same place by going to My Maine Connection. I think it's .gov, but if you just Google My Maine Connection. So if you know those three things, Help Me Grow, 211, and My Maine Connection, you've got a lot of support. So that's super cool. Anna brought up at the beginning that it's a dance. And Naomi used the wonderful image of blending and braiding to have all of these programs are some combination of public programs, programs that are mostly or partly publicly funded, but are operated by nonprofits, and then straight nonprofits. And everybody works together. So I'd just love to know anything about how the folks running these programs collaborate. I know, in addition to what we've talked about so far here in Hancock County, another program my family has really benefited from is the Maine Families program. And that's a nonprofit, but it is statewide. And that's another family visitor home visit program. And it's I describe her as our developmental specialist. And I often think like, oh, gosh, does that make it sound like we have special needs? Well, it wouldn't matter either way, but it is for everyone. And then another is the federal WIC, Women, Infants, and Children program, which I also don't know much about, but I know that in Ellsworth, it's operated by Maine Family Planning. So how does it work to work together with in this dance, either of you?
Well, I could speak to just, you know, being new back to Maine when I was a parent trying to call and find a provider for my child for care. I was really nervous about that. As we all know, there's oftentimes long wait lists. And one of the things that floored me immediately was that every place I called, it almost included included lunches and their programs, which was really exciting to me. And now I, you know, have since learned how that happens is we have a nutrition manager here at Down East Community Partners. And the state has a program where she helps connect providers with being able to get funding from the state for the food that they then serve their children. And she helps them with menus to get into the program. So that's, you know, one little example of how we're one offering of childcare, but we're still working with this whole network in Hancock and Washington counties of all these other home providers, large and small. And Anne, I'm sure you can speak a lot more to the connections that are happening.
Yeah. And I just say, I mean, one nice thing about the community action agencies, as Naomi has pointed out, there are a lot of programs within the community action agency. So those regional organizations help us to connect at the local level, a lot of the programs and folks like Naomi at the local level just have a better understanding of what's happening throughout their community and how to address kind of specific needs for those communities. But at the state level, we've started, I've been in my position for 5 years now, came on with the goal of really making sure that we at the state level are connected and coordinated in our work so that it's less confusing for folks on the ground. So in the early childhood space, we bring together the teams at Department of Education, which is the early learning team, and others who work on special education services with folks at the Office of Child and Family Services, at DHHS, as well as Maine CDC, which oversees a lot of these programs, and make sure that we are talking to one another about the implementation of all these programs so that it is better coordinated and we're able to better meet the needs of particularly specific populations, whether that's families with low income or our new Mainer families. We're doing a lot of work to try to support organizations to have the professional development and the support that they need to meet the unique needs of families. So I'd say we really started with making sure we're coordinated at the state level to then have that trickle down to the local level.
I would love to give a couple shout outs to some state programs that are our very biggest challenge. And I think in all early childhood centers in Maine, it's staffing. And we all know that staffing is a huge challenge in Maine in general. But right now, a couple of areas where the state's trying to help with that. One is a stability grant that's offered where teachers in early childhood centers, if they're working in direct service with children, receive a stipend monthly. So that's on top of their whatever their salary is or their hourly pay at the center where they work. And it's a program that offers increased funding based on professional development. So if a teacher has a bachelor's degree, they can earn more. If they have a master's degree, they can earn more on this monthly stipend, up to $450, which is huge for a lot of our teachers. It really makes such a difference. And the other one is a brand new program that started August 1st, and we haven't seen the benefits yet because I know they're so backed up, but the state is now offering an employment award to help fund teachers who have children in early childhood programs. So if I have a teacher who has their own child in an infant program, we all know how expensive that is. As Anna mentioned, it's really hard for infant programs to be sustainable because of their ratio requirements. They are very expensive. And so a teacher can barely make ends meet when they have an infant who's being cared for. And so now the state's going to help. And I think that's going to really help turn around some of our staffing shortages so parents can also speak teachers.
I just want to remind listeners that they're tuned to Talk of the Towns this afternoon, and we're speaking about early childhood education, both the programs and the policy angle. You've just heard from Naomi McIsaac, who is Director of Early Childhood Programs with Down East Community Partners, based in Ellsworth. And we also have with us Anna Hicks, who's the Policy Director in Human Services for the Governor's Office of Policy, Innovation, and the Future. Anna, to you, as you look at this, where is policy headed? What would you like to see in terms of beginning to continue the progress that's been made? Where do you want to go where do we want to go as a state?
Well, I think it's, just as I said, it's really strengthening our mixed delivery system. And one thing that, one thing is, as policymakers, we just talked about all of these programs, and it can be really hard to determine what's the policy agenda, what are the most important pieces that we should be focused on and pushing. And one of the most important things that we've done at the state level is in 2019, we got a preschool development grant. And as part of that grant, it was a planning grant. And as part of that grant, we actually did a needs assessment that included bringing together stakeholders from across the state, a variety of stakeholders from childcare teachers and childcare settings, directors of childcare programs, both family and center-based care, as well as social service providers and others working directly with families, and then also the parents themselves, and really hearing directly from parents about what their needs are. And we were able to respond over the last several years. And Naomi mentioned the salary supplement program for folks who work in childcare. We learned in a strong way through the needs assessment that workforce is the number one issue in this space. And so we want to make sure that we are doing all we can to support programs to be able to recruit and retain a qualified workforce. And that includes the salary supplement program. We provide a monthly stipend. The monthly stipend is based on experience in the field as well as education. So we're trying to recognize that folks who have more experience and more education should receive a higher stipend. And so folks at those levels receive over $500 per month through the state. So there's around $400 for folks who have kind of a little less experience in education. And then for that entry level, it's about a little over $200 per month. So that's the workforce is definitely, we heard loud and clear, we need to be investing in our workforce. We're also looking at how do we support our field to be able to address the unique needs of children, whether that's special needs or challenging behaviors. So we've put in place a program called the Early Childhood Consultation Partnership. And that is a program that provides a mental health provider to go into our childcare programs, our Head Start programs, our public pre-K programs, and work with those teachers and provide them the tools that they need to meet the social emotional needs of the children, as well as mental health needs of our children. So those are two big areas of focus for us as we look at how do we strengthen our birth through five system. Those are areas that we've heard loud and clear from folks in the field, as well as parents, is that we need to be doing a better job of helping our programs retain their qualified workforce. First of all, recruit and then retain qualified workforce. And then once folks are in place to help retain those staff, we really need to be providing the support that they need to succeed. And so that includes Early Childhood Consultation Partnership Program and really providing those tools to teachers, as well as we're working on expanding our professional development through our professional development network, and also helping folks to attain degrees in education and that support in that pathway in our early childhood space. So those are just a couple areas that we're really focused on really to really strengthen that our birth through five system. One other thing I just want to point out that's really important is that we've just expanded in July, not only assistance for folks who work in childcare, our childcare affordability program has been expanded in eligibility as well. So families who often think they might not be eligible to get any help to pay for childcare might be eligible now. We're up to 125% of the state median income, which for a family of three, that reaches up to $109,000 per year of an annual income. And so it's a little, it's higher than I think a lot of people realize. So they should definitely check out our Child Care Affordability Program. Doesn't pay the full amount, but it helps parents, particularly those with parents of young children. As Naomi, I've both explained, infant and toddler care is expensive for good reason, because we need to have those small ratios. But we want to be able to ensure that we're helping families pay for that care.
Mm. Naomi, as you think about coming into the system fairly recently, what do you see as some of the strengths from your position on the ground? What are the strengths of this system that we've described that you've seen?
Yeah, I think the forward thinking of the state and the work Anna's doing. I'm coming from Arizona, where there was no public pre-K in existence. There was still half day kindergarten. And there were not any of these supports in terms of thinking about retention of early childhood workforce and being able to help try to make the model more sustainable. So I really do think the state of Maine is forward thinking right now in a way that I hope can help turn around some of the challenges in there. I think the other strengths are just recognizing early childhood. I think there's been a long history in our country of a woman's job maybe being one that didn't need as much education and training, but there's a real recognition of this being important work that requires a degree or a CDA or an associate's. That people need the qualification to do the work well for the children.
Hmm. I want to refocus something that's been sticking in my head since at the very beginning of our conversation. We were talking about that positive childhood experiences can provide, you know, a well to draw from and a buffer against adverse experiences, which we're all going to have. At whatever age. And I was thinking back to a number of months ago, we did a show on resilience to climate change in our coastal communities. And it was actually super helpful to just have this sort of definition of resilience. And it's super applicable here, right? The ability to bounce back from trauma. So that's just where my brain is as we're in all these details of public policy and public programs that as education folks like to say that we're in it for the best interest of the kids. And that's part of how I'm thinking about it. So Anna, with that, tell us a little bit more. You mentioned a needs assessment, which sounded like the beginning of this, that there's got to be two-way communication between the government agencies, the public services, and the nonprofits and everyone else, including the public folks on the ground in service delivery. So is the Children's Cabinet connected to that? Is that another way that there's sort of a meeting of the minds?
Yeah. So let me just give you a little bit of idea who's on the Children's Cabinet. So the Children's Cabinet is actually made up of five commissioners who oversee programming and policies for children. So that the chair of the cabinet is our Commissioner of Health and Human Services, Sarah Gagne-Holmes. So much of the Children's Cabinet work does focus internally. We have high level staff that meet on a regular basis to make sure that we're coordinating that work. And just to play off of the positive childhood experiences, the Children's Cabinet is focused on some of those transitions. So we're focused on ensuring that all children enter kindergarten prepared to succeed and that all children enter adulthood healthy, connected to the workforce and or education. And so positive childhood experiences play a role throughout a child's life and really important that we're investing in that and our youth as well. But the work of the Children's Cabinet has led to us receiving a larger preschool development grant. So that first one was a planning grant. We've received a larger preschool development grant and have done work to continue to engage stakeholders. We're also part of, we're really helping to facilitate work across agencies. One other big initiative where we've been working to gain input from stakeholders is through the Child Safety and Family Wellbeing Plan. That was actually a nice partnership between the Maine Child Welfare Advocacy Network and the state, and going out and really hearing directly from families about their needs. And that campaign, they've launched a campaign called the Be There For Me campaign. And what we heard loud and clear from parents is that it's really hard to ask for help. And so the Be There For Me campaign, you should check it out, go to their website. There's some really incredible videos of parents talking about their experiences, that it's really universal. All parents really struggle at different times with raising children. Best thing they could be doing, but also the most challenging job that they'll ever have. And so really helping to break down that stigma. There's a social media campaign, there's radio campaign, really getting out there to talk to parents about, you know, that we all need to help ask for help at some point. And so that, there's the hope is that folks will go to that website and get connected to services such as Help Me Grow, such as Naomi's services. So that's all to say that we are on in an ongoing way at the Children's Cabinet. While it's more of an internal group, we are looking to really gain input from a variety of stakeholders. And one of those key stakeholders is also the Children's Cabinet Early Childhood Advisory Council, which is a council that meets monthly, that includes parents and includes childcare providers, folks working in the field, as well as folks from philanthropy. We have a pediatrician. So we meet on a monthly basis, and the state folks are there to really get input from that group of folks on an ongoing basis as well. So we do try to really, have avenues for input and ways to ensure that we are really getting a sense of what's happening on the ground, because it can be very, we can really be very distant at the state level, and that's not helpful. We really do need to hear directly from folks. So there's been a variety of initiatives to try to gather input from both providers and parents.
I wonder if that's a growing edge. So I remember hearing years ago, from a woman who is a child psychologist, focuses with teenage, actually, patients, is a therapist in a very privileged community in Palo Alto, California. And she would work with all these teenage girls. And invariably, she said, the moms would notice their daughters feeling better and think, oh, wait, actually, I kind of need some support, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The reaching out campaign, because so much is about knowing you're not alone for parents, and this sounds like ways to do that, and it's part of why the family visit and the home visit programs are so great. But I wonder if that's a potential policy edge about eventual expanding access to mental health supports for parents if that goes that direction, because the whole family system is connected.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the more supports we can be providing for parents, whether that's mental health supports or that whole family coaching that Naomi was talking about, that's mm-hmm. going to provide that stability for children. Absolutely. So we are continuing to look at and making sure that as we talk about and think about our early childhood programming, as well as programming for youth, that we are thinking about the family as a whole. It is definitely the direction. I mean, Ron asked about kind of policy direction. I would say that is one big policy direction as well, is you can't separate children from their parents. It's critical that we think about addressing the family as a whole.
Yeah.
I'll just say, to take us back to the very beginning, we're doing all this work because in the long run, it makes a healthier society. And that's less expensive than dealing with problems that emerge. So again, that just reinforces what you said, both of you said, Naomi and Anna said at the beginning, about the value of this kind of investment, public investment and private investment.
Okay. I was also going to say, it's also more fun in addition to less expensive to live in a healthy society, I'm going to bet. So I was super, super quickly before we do our final question. And I wondered about what's the role of the legislature in your work, very quickly?
Yeah, they've just been an incredible partner. I will say that a lot of the programs that I mentioned came out of partnerships with key legislators who really pushed for funding for these critical programs. So we couldn't do this work without the legislature, whether that was Speaker Ryan Fecteau, who helped to get the salary supplement program in place, or Senate President Troy Jackson, who helped to ensure that we were expanding the child care affordability program, as well as providing this opportunity for folks who work in child care. So very important partner in this work and have been strong leaders in pushing for these programs.
Great. So I'll stay with you and give Naomi the last word and to give her everybody more time to think too. So we always wrap up our show with what's one thing you wish was better understood? So here about early childhood education. Anna, what's your...
So I would say that for me, the most important thing, and I've already touched on it, is I really hope folks really understand the important role that our early childhood educators play in setting that foundation for our youngest children. It's one of our most critical professions and often overlooked. And that's why at the state, we're making this investment in our salary supplement program to ensure that our early childhood educators understand and feel appreciated. They again play one of the most important roles in any profession in providing that foundation to ensure that our children are successful in that early learning so that they can be successful throughout their lives as learners.
Yeah, I would add to that. I think it's a profession that deserves more respect from everyone. It's hard work and it's very important work. I'm seeing this great trend right now from our public school partners where, principals traditionally have been trained to work with kindergarten through eighth graders. And this pre-K thing is new to them and it's scary. Mm-hmm. It's new and they don't have the background. And all of a sudden, a lot of our partners that are principals are saying, oh my gosh, when pre-K is going well, we see it in kindergarten, we see it in first grade, and it makes such a difference moving forward for everyone.
Mm. Well, thank you all. We've come to the end of a very brief hour. Be sure and join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for other topics we can cover, please email us at news@weru.org. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balnane House Highland music recording. Thanks so much to our guests here for Talk of the Towns. Naomi McIsaac is the Director of Early Childhood Programs at Down East Community Partners in Ellsworth. But covering a wider area. And Anna Hicks is the Policy Director of Human Services in the Governor's Office of Policy, Innovation, and the Future. Thanks to our underwriters. Thanks to Joel Mann for engineering our program. Stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and The Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns. And this is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.